Now, according to the schedule, we have a split sermon by Mr. Andrew Carlson.
The title of today's split sermon is All Give Out. All Give Out. So All Give Out is a phrase, I assume most people know what it is, but probably a more rural phrase probably, but All Give Out just means dead tired, fatigued, all give out. And that's the imagery, if I could paint in the back of your mind, would be the kid that falls asleep in the back with the ice cream can and or the ice cream cone in their hand, just all give out. All the energy's been spent and just flat out fatigued. So what I ask is, why are we so fatigued? Why as a society, I think you see this, why are we so fatigued? Why are we so tired? Why are we always dragging? I call it, you know, dragging. Why are we dragging our tail? Why do we avoid the call that needs to be made, the email that needs to be answered? Maybe just the lunch with somebody that actually would be an enjoyable experience, but you're just fatigued. You're give out. You're all give out. But why, as we try to have a discussion here about why are you that way, or what is the path to overcome that fatigue? How do we overcome fatigue? Fatigue is not tired. Tired is usually a night or a weekend or a weather change away from being fixed or being solved. Tired is running hard, works long, kids are sick, whatever it may be. Tired is a lack of sleep. I'm talking about good old-fashioned fatigue. Just a feeling of fatigue is with you. It's the way I always differentiate between tired and fatigue. Tired you can fix. Fatigue is with you the moment you wake up. That's fatigue. It sits on your shoulder all day long. Fatigue just kind of hangs on you like a wet blanket or a wet towel. And it creeps heavy into the mind right before you sleep. Fatigue's there when you wake up, and it's almost like the last thing before you fall asleep. You know you're give out. You're not at your top of your game, and you just, right, there's not the vigor or the fight to go take on life. Why is that? Well, what I'm going to kind of base this sermon around is that our fatigue is not based upon a lack of sleep, but our fatigue is often caused by three core things. It's worry, frustration, and resentment. Worry, frustration, resentment. So to put it in technical terms, my hypothesis is it's not a matter of sleep. It's a matter of worry, frustration, and resentment. If you look through the Bible in its totality, the Bible does not speak exceptionally highly of sleeping, right? A little slumber, a little sleep, poverty is upon you, and multiple instances of that, especially throughout Proverbs, where the Bible doesn't speak exceptionally high of always being asleep or resting up, but it does in many instances, New Testament, Old Testament, about gaining strength, either through being ministered to, ministering to others, to gaining strength through the Lord, but not sleep. So that's where I'm going to hedge my bets here and say, I don't think fatigue, and why would God give us a book that's for our sake and give us a mixed signal if he really thought what we should do is be sleeping versus gaining strength to overcome what, you know, in our English language, fatigue. You may be wearing the wrong yoke, right? If you're extremely fatigued, you may be wearing the wrong yoke. A yoke is the old fashioned, you know, kind of phrase that you put over the shoulders for men actually, or mules, but a yoke is what you harness into, right? It's metaphorically what you pull. You use that yoke, you strap it on, and that becomes a differential or the transmission, so to speak, of the ability to pull something across the field. Maybe with worry, frustration, resentment, you're wearing the wrong yoke. We all have a yoke to bear. Everybody has a yoke to bear, male, female, old, young. The Lord gave us shoulders. So obviously, there's a yoke for us to bear. He didn't have to make us with shoulders, but he did. So we should shoulder in to the right yoke. Make sure you're pulling the right yoke. Oftentimes we saddle ourselves or yoke ourselves to the wrong things. Let's turn to Matthew 11, verse 28. And there what you will find is, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke, my being capitalized, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. That is how you gain strength or overcome fatigue. For it says in verse 30, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And obviously, as you know, those words are in red. So directly from the words of Jesus Christ, there is a yoke to bear. But when you bear the right yoke, it is the burden is there, right? He doesn't say he doesn't have a burden, but it's easy. And the burden is light. You know, it's the right yoke. Take appraisal of your life and make sure that when you shoulder in every day or every week or whatever time period you look at, that you're pulling the right yoke. And if you're overly fatigued, you have no energy to go tackle the spiritual, the physical portion of life, and not just a moment of tiredness, right? We all know ourselves, and you go through these, there's a season for everything, as it says in the Bible. But if you're overly fatigued or wore out and don't have the energy, go look at the yoke that you have put over your own shoulders. Fatigue is not a lack of sleep. It is a consequence, oftentimes, of too much sleep. And by sleep, I use that metaphorically. Often you're asleep at the wheel of your spiritual life. If you're overly fatigued, you tend to be asleep at the wheel of your spiritual life. I have felt this many times myself. You start to write negative builds on negative and positive builds on positive and like likes like. And what happens is you get in these downward spirals and you get to the time, and I do this all the time, where you don't have the time to pray, or you don't have the time to read the Bible. You don't have the time for meditation. What you really are saying is that you don't have the time to do what's right and lessen your load. You literally are breeding upon your own cycle downwards. Let's go to Proverbs 20, verse 13. Proverbs 20, verse 13. This goes back to what I was speaking about on the sleep side. It says, do not love sleep, lest you come to poverty. Open your eyes, and you will be satisfied with bread. So kind of playing off what I've pointed out there. And there's multiple proverbs around this. Sleep is not the answer to a misaligned life. And sleep is not the answer to a focus on the wrong thing. Knowing that your burden should be light and pulling into that actually is a way to gather strength, right? When your cause is whole, you'll see this with adults, but especially children, when the cause is true, the spirit is light. So if your spirit isn't light and you feel down, or you're dragging your tail, question why. What are you doing? And why is the weight not light? Usually it's a misallocated load. You've put yourself into the wrong sled. And, for lack of a better term, you're jockeying the wrong truck with the wrong load. Go to Isaiah chapter 40, verse 29. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 29. Isaiah 40, 29. He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall be faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not be faint. So direct correlation. When your heart is in the right place, you can continue to run. Go find out what you've misloaded onto your list of things that are causing this weight for you. Mine, as I put out there, worry, frustration, and resentment. A misallocation of energy towards useless endeavors. They may not be bad, but in the grand scheme, as the truth that we know, a misallocation of energy towards useless endeavors will fatigue a person at 10 times the rate of the energy expended towards a noble and a pure cause. You could argue, where did I get 10x from? I got 10x because we had to come up with a split sermon, right? But watch, when the cause is noble, the load is light. And if you're pulling the right way, whether you're a man or a woman, the fatigue doesn't set in. Tiredness may. We're physical beings, right? We're physical beings working towards a spiritual life. But the fatigue will go away when the cause is right. Fatigue is a very close relative to hopelessness. So if you look at the genealogy, I'd make a case, if you look at the genealogy, that fatigue is very closely related to hopelessness. And hopelessness is probably maybe even a brother or sister, or at least a first cousin to anxiety. And if you hang out there long enough, you'll get them all put together. You'll get hopelessness, you'll get resentment, frustration, anxiety to some extent, right? It's just a word for frustration, hopelessness, right? You can't overcome the situation that you're anxious about, or you don't see a path through it. Don't find yourself on the genealogy or on the map close to hopelessness, frustration, resentment. Most of the time, the first indication of this that you'll see in any person, myself included, is anxiety. If you're anxious and you don't know why you're anxious, you should really sit down and try to figure what that is. Stick your nose in the Bible, pray. If you're anxious and you don't have the clue to why you're anxious, and there's just this feeling of anxiety, I truly believe that's not the way the Lord made you to live. Go question why you have this feeling. If you would, go to Jeremiah 29, Jeremiah 29. Jeremiah 29, verse 11. For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not evil, to give you a future and a hope. This is the Lord. For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not evil, give you future and hope. If you have hopelessness, you don't have peace, and you have anxiousness, it directly opposed the Lord has toward you or what he wishes for you. So, if the Lord, as we all know, or God is unchanging and pure in every sense, and these are the thoughts he has towards you, and they don't line up with you, and he's unchanging and right, that would tell you the misallocation or the issue is probably you and the way that you're going about what you worry about, what you're valuing in life. Stop. Recalibrate, if that's the right way. Check your compass off of the Bible. It's a pretty good chance you've taken the wrong trail. And you're headed south when you think you're headed east or west or north, and you're getting yourself lost in the trees. The Lord has these thoughts for you. It would be very odd that he would wish harm to you, right? No point in the Bible does God display a want for us to be in a state of terror, so to speak, about our own lives and where we stand. Go to Philippians 4, Philippians 4. Philippians 4, verse 6. And there we find, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. So the Lord is saying, if you ask, I will give you peace. Be anxious for nothing. And if you are, but give prayer and supplication. So here's why I make my hypothesis. If you have prayer, you have supplication of whole soul, right? God knows the heart. Then why would you be anxious? And if God's unchanging, never changing, and right, so you know his word is right, and you continue to have this, put yourself back in the place to align to the compass that the Lord has laid out. I think you'll find fatigue and tiredness and restlessness will just magically, I shouldn't say magically, it'll begin to fade. Anxiety is to suffer the consequences up front of the consequences you fear you may suffer. A little play on words there, but truly anxiety is to already suffer the consequences up front of the consequences that you're afraid you may suffer. What a silly human trait to be anxious. You're paying the bill on something you didn't buy in your own mind, and you've done it to yourself. Plant your path down the road as you know you must navigate it. It's here, right? I mentioned this before. The Bible is really one big trail map of life for us, right? I mean, there's parts of genealogy and the history, but it's basically a trail map, the old-fashioned Rand McNally trail map. It's all there. It's not wrong, but we don't read it oftentimes because we know better. We assume in our human mind that we know our cardinal directions and we'll figure this out ourselves. Find your trail and get down it with the right trail map. Navigate, and I think when you set your compass right, hopelessness will begin to move towards optimism. You'll see this. It doesn't happen all at once, but hopelessness will begin to move towards optimism. And rarely, how many anxious people do you know that are optimists? I don't know any. Like, anxious people aren't trending towards optimism, quite the opposite. They're trending the other way. Go navigate properly. Hopelessness will tend to move away from you. Anxiety kind of follows it out of the camp, and you have this optimism, and you never see an optimistic non-anxious person who is fatigued. Think about an optimistic person, they're non-anxious, there's not this heavy weight on them. Rarely does that person who's always happy, sits at the table, you're glad to be around them, they give you energy, so to speak. How many times is that person anxious? I can't say that I ran across one in my life that is a optimistic individual who's fatigued all the time and dragging and dour. What I've tried to tackle to this point, and maybe not well, is worry and anxiety and frustration. So I want to take a little bit of a look, and I think this is a big one. I think in our society, you see this building, is resentment. The third factor around resentment and focusing on resentment and what it's done to us as individuals. Often resentment is the projection of your own weaknesses and your failures against the perceived successes of someone else. I didn't pull that out of a dictionary, my own wordsmithing, so you could argue right or wrong, but resentment is the projection of your own weaknesses and failures against the perceived success of someone else. You really know at your roots when you resent somebody, you're actually disappointed in yourself. But you got to find a reason why it's not you and it's them, and that their success somehow is your failure, and that it's a zero-sum game. And it's not true. You drain your energy. You wear out your own mind. You deplete your soul and heart rooting against someone else versus doing something to fix your predicament. You have, you would say there's a limited amount of energy, so to speak, that an individual has, right? We all have 24 hours. We have our responsibilities. You have this, what I would call this beautiful natural resource called energy, and you're spending yours rooting against somebody else and hoping they fail versus taking that same amount of energy and fixing your own problems and driving your own way forward. I believe there is a direct correlation between resentment equals fatigue. Resentful people are fatigued. They see it again and again. The bigger the paycheck, the more solid the marriage, the better looking the individual, or just plain good luck that's not yours, tends to build into resentment. And here's the funny thing. Their big paycheck, their wonderful marriage, their great looks is really none of your concern. God disperses his gifts as he sees fit, right? And here you are to be resentful of someone, right? Hey, not to be a Calvinist to some extent, but to be resentful of somebody is to actually question God's plan. Yeah, whether he dictated it specifically or he's letting things play out. But to be resentful of somebody else is to question God's judgment on how he disperses his gifts and his blessings. I don't think you want to be in the role when questioned before the Lord of your questioning of his decision making. I'm going to tell you, I think he's probably right and we're probably wrong when resentment creeps its way into our life and it tends to end up in fatigue. Visualize that person right now. You know the person, right? That one that you think of it. You don't have to say the name, but you kind of, maybe not resentful. Maybe you're getting older and it's like, but there's this niggling little feeling in the back of your mind and there's a little frustration. Like, how does that person have that? How did they get to where they got, right? Think about that. Think about that as we turn to Matthew 5, verse 45. Matthew 5, verse 5. That you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and the unjust. Think about that. He's telling you right there, my plan. I got this. Sometimes bad people get good things and good people get bad things. But resentment, if you really unwind it, that person in your mind that you're thinking about, you're questioning God's weather pattern. And you're really saying, I don't think it's appropriate that he let it rain, metaphorically, on that individual's field. That person, in my judgment, did not deserve it. That's none of your concern, as I've said. It's none of your concern. And to some extent, make the case it's almost a thumb in the eye of God. Quit trying to understand the weather of life. Life is not fair, never has been, never will be. Get over it. Get over that resentment. Get over the fact that breaks maybe didn't go your way. I'm going back to what I said. We get into these ruts, right? This person got this benefit, or you're resentful. You don't, as you get older, it's maybe not outward, but you still have that on the inside. it's a sad thing that fatigues an individual. It brings them down, some resentful, just a insecure individual that nobody wants to be around. If you go to Job 5:2. Job 5:2. For wrath kills a foolish man, and envy slays a simple one. And as we know, the Bible also, God calls those of simple mind. So there's a warning there, hidden in Job, right there is a warning. Wrath kills a foolish man. We probably better understand that. Wrath, it's more visual, right? When someone's truly wrathful, you see it. It's hard to mistake it. But envy, it kind of creeps. It's like water on cement, right? In the cement of your mind, it'll find every crack and seep its way in there. But envy slays a simple one. And if we're simple, hidden in there, I think, is quite a message. Don't be envious. Envy, you're wasting, you're depleting yourself, you're fatiguing your mind and your soul, worried about God's weather pattern that is none of your concern and not under your control. Any given week, if you're honest, do you spend more time marveling at the creation of God's hand? We have days that get longer, days that then get shorter. As long as there is a God, there shall be a spring, as it says in the Bible. Do you spend more time this last week marveling at creation of God's hand? The fact you're sitting on a ball, you're sitting literally on a ball, suspended in space, traveling 1,000 miles per hour. So right now, as you sit in church, you're traveling 1,000 miles per hour with this glowing orb right over the top of us as we get to the longest, this glowing orb in the sky that you must have to live, right? We have to have sun, vitamin D, the way, you know, plants to grow. You have to live and eat and be happy. It makes you happy, right? You're out in the sun, you're happy. But this beautiful creation that the Lord has made, but if you're in it too much, you can lead to skin cancer. What a crazy, fantastic weaving of a quilt the Lord has given to us. Have you spent more time this last week just marveling at that? Or did you spend more time this week locked up thinking of someone else and not in a positive way? And when I say thinking, I don't mean thinking about them in prayer. But genuinely, when you search your own heart this week, did you marvel more at the fact of what the Lord created, the fact he lets you be alive and walk this earth, and he wants you to be, I mean, one of his children, to be in his kingdom? If you counted up the minutes, or did you spend more time this week worried about somebody else and their success or their failures or whatever the case may be? I don't know. I probably, in my case, I would tell you, my ledger or my double entry accounting would probably not reflect the way I want it to reflect. How are you putting your time and your energy to use? Resentment is a cancer. Drive it out of your life and step back and be amazed at how you feel energy come back into your bones and fatigue disappear. It truly is a cancer. Resentment is a cancer that'll lead to fatigue. Drive it out of your life. And I mean, it's a effort to work resentment out of your life. And right in Proverbs, pray for your enemy, right? That's another way. Drive resentment away from you and watch the energy back into your life. The opposite resentment, right? In a human interaction, the opposite of resentment is love. And it's hard to be resentful when your mind is in a place of truly God, you know, crafted and given love. Go to 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4. The opposite under the theory, to drive fatigue out of your life, to remove resentment, which I think leads to this fatigue, this use of energies, a worthless end. Put yourself in a mindset of love. And here, the greatest gift, right? Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. Is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely. Does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in inequity. Rejoices in the truth. Bears all things. Believes all things. Hopes all things. And endures all things. Fatigued people don't have hope. And they usually do not endure. But at the beginning there, verse 8, we'll just take that. Love never fails. Not my words. You know, word inspired. Love never fails. If it's not true, it wouldn't be in the Bible. Turn to Hebrews 12. Hebrews 12, if you would. Hebrews 12, verse 14. Hebrews 12, verse 14. And you'll usually find this under this title in my bio, is a renew your spiritual vitality, right? Which is vitality, strength, or, you know, the opposite, or a non-corollary to fatigue. But verse 14, pursue peace with all people and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord, looking carefully, lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble. Bitterness, resentment, right? Bitterness and resentment, I think you could almost say they're co-words. But by this, become defiled. Don't let that root of bitterness, and that's where I go back to, driving resentment out of your life. It's not a non-action. It is the removal of sin. It takes work to drive resentment out of your mind and being conscious of your own mind to make it go away. It's spiritual food that you need, right? Spiritual food is what gives energy. And our, you know, we eat as physical beings to gain energy. Spiritual food is what you need. That will drive fatigue out of your mind. Go to Luke 6, verse 37. Luke 6, verse 37. Luke 6, verse 37 and 38. Judge not, and you shall not be judged. Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. In good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. Right? So pressed down, it will be put into your bosom. What's your bosom? It's into your chest, into your stomach. That spiritual food. Judge not, condemn not, be resentful not. It would make sense, right? If that phrase was in it, don't let bitterness take hold. It's a spiritual food. Spiritual food equals energy. What is energy? The direct opposite of fatigue. In order to stand in the face of fatigue, if you're feeling this, in order to stand, right? When you're fatigued, you usually want to lay down, right? You're tired, you know, using those interchange words, probably shouldn't do that, but you want to lay down. But to drive fatigue out, you have to stand up. The first thing you should do before you stand is kneel. Kneel and pray. Go to the Bible, look at the trail map that's been given to you, and pray. Pray that you have the strength, the understanding, to chase worry, frustration, and resentment from every nook and cranny of your life. Drive it out. May I ask, you know, spend the next week, write down those three words, worry, frustration, and resentment, write those down, and take the time and clean them out of your life. You know, the old fashion, I don't know if it does anymore, but remember you had to like clean up your computer files, the old DOS program would put them together and put them in the right place. Write those words somewhere that you see them every day, spend the time to drive and clean them from your life. It won't happen just by hoping. It's why we de-leaven, right? Why does God make us de-leaven, de-leavening our houses? It's sin, right? Driving sin. He could have just put it in the Bible, told us drive sin out of your life. Or, hey, you know, as Catholic, with a rosary bead, something about driving it out of your life. But why does he make us physically de-leaven around days of unleavened bread towards sin? Because the mind learns what the hand does. The mind learns what the hand does. Still Montessori schools, that was a great phrase that they're kind of their motto, but the mind learns what the hand does. It's why you should have your children work if you can, physical labor, male and female. The mind learns what the hand does. That's why we de-leaven, because our mind is learning what our hand does. It's a direct connection. Discipline is freedom. Discipline your mind and refuse to allow yourself to dwell on those three cancers we've talked about. They invade every day. They're coming every day. You wake up, worry, frustration, and resentment. And as silly as it sounds, discipline is freedom. They seem like they're not. They are one and the same. Discipline is freedom. To have the discipline to free yourself from your own sin and your own weaknesses. When you evict, well, I'll call, when you evict these three non-rent paying concepts from your mind, so they're living up in your mind, right? Worry, frustration, resentment, non-paying rent, right, just living in your head. Fatigue tends to slouch out the back door as you drive those non-paying tenants out of the house of your head. Be amazed how it'll work. You drive, you take the effort, you find the energy to go find your energy. Drive them out of your mind. Move on in your life from being all give out to all bought in. Move from all give out to all bought in. Buy into love, for it never fails. As I said, not my words, but buy into love, buy into good. If you're not where good is happening, get to where it is happening. And if you are where bad is, get away from it and get away from it quickly. But go from all give out to all bought in. And you might just find out when this is all over, you have a pile of energy to go tackle what you need to do good in your life.